It's such incredible technology in the right hands. In the wrong hands, it scares the absolute out of me. Welcome to the Techishly Gen podcast. We are smart tech for real life. Think of it as your girlfriend's guide to gadgets.
Here to help us, tech life columnist Jennifer Jolly.
Here to help me test them out, Jennifer Jolly.
Jen is the nationally syndicated tech life columnist for USA Today. You always blow our mind.
Jennifer Jolly, whose name is just fun to say.
Jennifer Jolly!
Hello, world. Welcome to Techishly Gen, the podcast that has been 10 years in the making. I'm here with producer Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Jen. So excited for this first episode.
And man, do we ever have something to talk about today. New technology can solve crimes faster, safer, less expensively than ever before. But in some places, it's giving Handmaid's Tale vibes. I mean, really, next-gen AI surveillance, what could possibly go wrong?
Flock safety cameras collect data from every single vehicle that passes by.
What we don't expect is that when we go out in public, when we leave our homes, that we are going to be surveilled 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Before we get right into the interview, I have to tell you about a time I came home from work to an open door, like a kicked open door, and a ransacked house. I was working as a young reporter in Spokane, Washington, and part of my normal routine was covering crime. But of course, I did not expect for it to happen to me. It was so, so scary. The place was a total mess. The burglars had used my own pillowcases to haul off anything and everything of any value, heirloom jewelry. The police came, they took a report, and they left saying, you know, sorry, not much we can do. Weeks of checking pawn shops, posting reward signs, hoping for a miracle, nada. I kept telling myself it was just stuff. I mean, I remember being like, why am I so upset about this? It's just stuff. But it was that like deep sense of violation. And it just didn't go away. It was like, how could somebody just steal something so valuable to me and just get away with it? And I don't mean like, oh, valuable to me and how dare you. It was just the injustice, the unfairness. And I imagine that a lot of you listening to this have felt the same way at some time in your life. I know that Garrett Langley did. He's the co-founder and CEO of Flock Safety. That is a company recently valued at $7.5 billion. Flock operates in more than 6,000 communities and touches nearly every corner of American law enforcement. Let's take a listen.
7 years ago, I was just a regular guy, an engineer from Georgia Tech, to be clear, so maybe not that regular. And my neighborhood, just like many neighborhoods in America, was the victim of organized crime. Now, this wasn't violent crime. It was property crime. People, these groups were coming in and breaking into our cars, breaking into our homes. And I was frustrated because the Atlanta Police Department said, look, there's just nothing we can do. We have no evidence. And I was like, well, I have a doorbell camera. I have a dog. I have all these things that I pay for, right? Why don't they work? And they're like, well, they're not objective and they're not actionable. And I said, well, fine. What do you need? I said, we need a license plate. So that seems weird, but sure. Okay. So I called two friends of mine from Georgia Tech and said, we got to build this license plate reading camera. So we built it on my dining room table. We put it up there. And 2 months later, when those guys came back, we did have the evidence they needed. And so to your question of where we are today, now 20-ish percent of the time when that happens in America, Flock is the reason an arrest is occurring. And so there's 1,500 people who wake up every day just like me saying, how do I make Jennifer safer? How do I make her family safer? How do I make her city safer? How do I make that state of California a safer place to live?
When you gave that information to the police, you gave them a license plate number.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. So I had as much confusion as you do of like, I don't understand how this is going to help. So what was interesting is that in the case of our neighborhood, it was the only vehicle in the neighborhood at that time. It was in the middle of the night. So there was a pretty good expectation, like, this is probably our person. So they put what's called a bolo out on the vehicle, be on the lookout for. So they notified every single officer in Atlanta, hey, if you see this vehicle, do a traffic stop. There's probable cause this person's associated with this crime. Now, the good thing is most criminals are not that smart. When they pulled that person over later that morning, everything was still in the car. the person got arrested. And I think, no, it's not always that easy, but, you know, it only takes one mistake for a criminal to get caught. If you look at a place like Nextdoor, most of the commentary is about public safety. It's about the fact that regardless of the data, people feel less safe today than they did 30 years ago. And there are parts of it that are out of our control, but a lot of it's in our control, that we actually can increase people's safety at a community level. Because if you look at it, to my earlier point, before Flock, every single piece of technology to keep you safe was just focused on you. Just you and your house. And that's logical. But if your neighbor's home gets broken into, you're still nervous the next night. And even if the neighborhood down the street has a break-in, you're still thinking about, oh, we got to make sure we lock our doors. And so there was this realization that Flock, hence the name Flock, we could work together to move the perimeter of defense farther out, to act like a community to actually help ourselves be safe.
Yeah, you know, you're hitting on a bunch of things that I think about all the time. I've had my house robbed.
Oh, God.
And that's a shock to come home and it was wiped out and they took like really meaningful things. And I just remember just feeling so incredibly vulnerable. I just never knew that I was that vulnerable, I guess. It was just such a feeling of helplessness, hopelessness. I went to pawn shop after pawn shop to find a ring that was a family heirloom.
Yeah.
You know, three generations in, never recovered anything. What does Flock safety look like in my everyday life? When would it help me? When would I notice it, if ever? Like, what's that feeling that I'm getting? Kind of going from that feeling of being a sitting duck and there's nothing I can do to there is something out here to help me.
So on day zero, we're going to turn every single law enforcement officer into Superman. She's going to be able to do things she was never able to do. So we're going to deploy cameras that track cars so that whenever a stolen vehicle, an outstanding warrant, a missing child, a silver alert, maybe it's a missing grandparent or father, mother, we're going to know where they are. And we are going to turn what is traditionally viewed as a very subjective job where you drive around looking for suspicious activity into a very objective job, where Flock will tell these patrol officers where to go because we know there's criminal activity. Now, then we're going to layer drones on top. Because instead of getting in high-speed pursuit, we're going to fly a drone, right? And so we develop American-made drones here in Georgia that when a 911 call occurs, when there's a stolen car, the drone goes first. What's going to happen in that first year is your clearance rate, which is the likelihood that an arrest occurs when something bad happens, is going to go from the national average, which is typically about 1 in 8 chance of getting arrested if you steal a car, and about a 1 in 2 chance of getting arrested if you kill someone. Maybe really clear. The odds are in criminal side right now. We will flip that equation. That's step one. And then if you look at the primary research, what is shown is that there's an inverse correlation between clearance rate and crime rate, right? So the higher the likelihood to get arrested, the less crime occurs. And so when you wake up 5 years later in your town, crime is approaching zero. And that's our goal. We don't want to arrest people. That's kind of the negative consequence of the business we're in. We want cities to thrive. We want people to feel safe. We want their kids to play outside. We want businesses to be built, families to be grown. And that's what I would hope for your town.
Well, you say you don't want to arrest people. What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah.
Because you do want those arrests.
We want to hold people accountable for the decisions they make. But I think you and I would both agree, if you have an at-risk teenager, going to jail is maybe the worst thing we can do for that child. We need to convince them not to be a criminal in the first place. And that's the opportunity we have as a society, is to show these children, because they are children, and the average criminal is 16 to 22 years old. These are still undeveloped adults. We need to show them that if you commit this crime, whether it is stealing a car or hurting someone, you will be held accountable. And your life will be on a new trajectory in the wrong way. Instead, go get a job, go to school. Like, there are so many other avenues that we've got to create.
You're touching on so many cultural and societal hotspots. My brain's exploding a little bit. Like, okay, let's go back to the making police officers superheroes. That's going to sound alarm bells in a lot of people's minds. But you put these really powerful tools in the right hands. And at times you put these really powerful tools in the wrong hands. And those are some of the headlines that we're seeing about, hey, we didn't think about overstep. We didn't think about, you know, where are these guardrails? Where should they be? So let's start there with that scale. It's not just a local, it becomes not just a local tool anymore. Who makes the calls about how it's being used, what's appropriate, where are the guardrails?
I was in one of the more populated counties in Virginia, and there's an organized international gang from South America that is flying illegal drones, looking inside windows, trying to figure out who's not home, who is home, to break into their homes. The enemy here already has way more sophisticated technology than we're giving our law enforcement. So we have a choice as society to say, you know what, you're going to stick to pen and paper, and you just got to figure things out. Or, like you alluded to, we can give these men and women the same technology their counterparties have, but with the right restrictions, with the right safeguards, with the right oversight. And that's what we try to do at Flock, right? So we go in and say, we're not the lawmakers. I'm not the police chief of America. I'm just a technology guy. And so I want to go to your mayor, your city council, and say, here are all the levers you can pull. Data retention is a great one. How long do you want law enforcement to have access to this data? Some cities say 7 days, some say 30, some say 5 years. I don't live in any of those cities. I live in Atlanta. I care about what Atlanta does. But we want the mayor, we want the city council to have that control. We also think about transparency. In a place like Piedmont, California, every search conducted on Flock is publicly available. That's what works for Piedmont. You go to Dallas, Texas, very different. None of their searches are publicly available. The city manager, right, the police department's boss has access to that. So we want to give that level of control, that level of transparency back to the city, because it's a local problem. This is not a national problem. I think we often get conflated of these national politics, which are quite rhetorically extreme, but at a local level, you just want to be safe and you want to elect people that you trust to make good decisions on your behalf. That's the whole democratic process.
We are getting reports of agencies going very much outside of the local realm of what your technology was intended to do or is intended to do. So the capabilities of these tools seem like they've outpaced sort of this decision-making and oversight. It's an under-regulated universe right now.
This is a good example where the world is accelerating faster and faster every single day. And it is a challenge, but also an opportunity for our local officials to keep pace. So in the case of someone like ICE or DHS, they are not a customer of Flock. They do not have access to any cameras unless the person who pays for the camera actively chooses to share. So if you're a local police department, chooses to share with ICE or the U.S. Postal Service or the U.S. Marshals or ATF, that's totally in their control. And I think what we've tried to do over the last few months is better educate elected officials. This is your choice. These policemen and women, they work for you, not me. If you don't want your local police department to have an active, productive relationship with federal authorities, you can choose to tell them not to. And so in some places like California, it is a state law that law enforcement doesn't work with the federal law enforcement. And so we don't enable it. It's actually hard disabled in our system if you're in California. Now, if you're in Ohio, there is no state law. It's a local decision. So the decision happens at local levels. To be very clear, Jennifer, local law enforcement works every single day with the federal government. There is currently a hot topic related to ICE, but like, I think we want them working with the United States Postal Service on identity theft. I think we want them working with the U.S. Marshals on missing children. I think we want them working with ATF on mass scale firearm trafficking. So it's a balance. And I think we need our elected officials to step up and tell their constituents what they believe is right for the city.
The other hotbed topic here is the fact that you're a privately held company. And so a lot of people are saying, yeah, but you're going to say whatever you need to make the sale at the peril of kind of this over-policing, over-surveillance state. How do you respond to that criticism?
When your home's invaded, when your car is stolen, when your child is kidnapped, God forbid, let's talk about the realities of the situation, which that happens in America every single day. We have to have law and order. We have to have a society that has a bedrock of safety. So then the question is, like, how do you do that in a way that still maintains American civil liberties and expectations? And I think that is a part of my job, is to help us thread that needle. But I can't do it alone. We believe it is a function of people, policy, and technology. I am the technology part. I can't write the policy, and I'm not the person who's going to enforce it.
You have put some more guardrails in place based on recent criticism. I mean, you know, with any kind of new technology, especially surveillance technology, always comes a creep factor, no matter how good it is.
Yep.
In your opinion, today, has Flock Safety done enough to protect our civil liberties?
The answer is yes, but we're not done. It's technology to continue to evolve. And so let me give you a really good example of a recent technology we developed and what we did. We developed a piece of technology called Freeform. Freeform allows an officer to go in and search in plain text. So I could search for a 1980s white pickup truck with rust on the roof. This is an AI product. We have a dedicated team of constitutional attorneys at Flock. They review every single line of code effectively that before it goes to production to say, hey, do we feel good about this? We're all American citizens. Do we feel good about this? Is this legal? And in this case, they flagged a question. What if someone searches for a Kamala Harris bumper sticker? Is that actually a search of someone's political beliefs? What if someone searches for an Israeli flag or a Palestine flag? And these are the questions that we actually have to deal with before we get to ship products, before we get to think about selling them and generating revenue. And in their case, like, thankfully, I'm not a constitutional attorney. That's not my job. And we have that fight, right? That tension of how do we both deliver safety while being an American company? And in that case, we spent probably three times as much time figuring out the right moderation policy, the right implementation, the right training than it took to write the code. The code was pretty quick. It was everything afterwards to make sure that it gets implemented properly. And in a lot of times, to your point around transparency and auditing, we go 10 times farther than anyone else in our industry. Our customers would prefer just to search for anything. And we're the ones saying, guys, I know you want to be able to do that, but we got to also protect the Constitution. And same on data retention. I think you talk to any law enforcement officer, they would say, because of Flock's data retention policies, we solve less crime than if we could store the data forever. And I go, that's the exact trade-off we should have. We should have that trade-off. Now, what I would also say is, I don't know if you want me to be the policer of the police. I don't think that's actually my job. I think in this case, the police chief reports to a city manager. The police chief has an internal affairs department. Like, this structure is not new. To be very fair, a gun is a much more dangerous weapon than Flock. Much more dangerous. And we have systems in place already. Now, perhaps the scale or the pace of change has picked up. But when I sit down with a police chief and a city manager, they have an existing relationship of one of authority where the city manager knows it is their job to hold the police chief accountable when mistakes happen. And so even in a place like Atlanta, not too many years ago, when there was a case of bad conduct, the mayor made a choice to fire the police chief. That's not my choice. That's not the gun manufacturer's choice. That's the mayor's choice. That's the city manager's choice. So I got to give them the tools to see what's happening, which we do in our audit trail and our transparency portals. But I don't think anyone wants me to be the arbiter of what's good and what's bad societally.
I know that you've made some changes based on potential misuse. So that was one of the things that comes up with the growing infrastructure and the lack of regulation. We end up with the ability to collect and aggregate massive amounts of personal data. Companies will often follow what rules are imposed on them, but the real issue is those rules often don't exist yet. Are you in that phase of saying, oh crap, we didn't think about that, let's put in some guardrails? Or like, how are you just feeling today in terms of keeping up with stuff you didn't see potentially being an issue?
We have spent thousands of hours working with state regulators to convince them to implement regulation. Now, clearly we're a business. We have a point of view of what we think is good regulation. I would say generally, we think almost any regulation is better than no regulation. And so look at something like SB 34 in California. It clearly articulates the use and abuse of a system like Flock. And while we, I'm sure if I asked my policy team, they would articulate the six things they wish they could change in it, we are very happy as a company. We know what playing field we're on. And when you look at places like Virginia, we worked really closely with Governor Youngkin to get legislation introduced. And it was hard, right? Because you got a lot of people with opinions, but it is so much better to have the debate, to have the conversation so that every single side can get their voice out. But I would say, yeah, we're probably in the middle of it right now, but we've been working on this for years. This is not new to us. We've been pushing for this to happen.
Why is it all blowing up right now? Like, business is blowing up in a good way. The criticism is blowing up in a not great way for you, for the company. Like, why all of this right now?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say the criticism is bad for us, because I think that most people come to the same conclusion that I have, which is, yep, this is complicated. Yep, this is not black and white. This is a little messy, but I would prefer if my family was safe. So let's find a way to get this done. Let's not just revert back to the Stone Ages. Let's use technology to better society. Now, why is it rhetoric today? Only one thing's really changed, which is the federal administration. And politics aside, the root issue is not Flock, Jennifer. The root issue is that there are certain people who do not trust the federal government. We are being lumped into that, despite not having any contractual relationship with the groups they're upset with. But that's the root issue. It's not about Flock. It's not even about your local police department. Most people, if you talk to them, deeply trust their local police department. It's the federal government they have issue with, and I can't fix that for them.
What are the questions that city councils, communities, people like me should be asking when a town is considering, an area is considering bringing Flock safety cameras in, and technology in general, whether it's drones, gunshot detection, the cameras, what's the right question to ask?
You go to city council meetings. Sorry, they're open forums, they're public questions, and ask the question to city council. Every single city council tends to have a public safety committee and say, hey, chairwoman, what federal agencies does our local law enforcement partner with? Which ones do we have task force with? Which ones are we concerned about? Which ones are we excited about? I think most people are probably, maybe it's probably making a jump to your conclusion. I think most people think human trafficking's bad. I hope so. Well, there's a handful of federal authorities that are focused on that. So I hope our local law enforcement's working with the U.S. Marshals to try to crack down on that. And also parts of DHS are focused on human trafficking or gun trafficking or narcotic trafficking. So you got to ask those questions. And then I think the second question is, well, great. Now that we have an understanding of what is societally being enforced in our city, right? Because in some cases, immigration is not enforced. In some cases, immigration is enforced. That's a societally decided law, right? There's a federal law on illegal immigration. In California, they choose to societally not enforce it. Well, guess what? Once they've already made that decision, it's very easy for technology like Flock to exist because we said, great, we don't do immigration. In California, we don't do immigration. It's against the law. It's really simple. Like, it's not complicated. SB 34 clearly articulates that the use of law enforcement technology cannot be aided in enforcing immigration.
So at your technological level, at the tech level, you take that ability out? Explain that.
To the best of our abilities. Clearly, we cannot change, we can't control what humans do, like out in the field. But from an enforcement, when you log into Flock in California, we articulate in a very simple form the rules of SB 34, which are include the use of this technology to enforce immigration. We write it in plain English. You are consenting that you are not using this to conduct an immigration enforcement. Now, I obviously can't stop that person. That's not my job, but I mean, I'm putting everything in their face to say, you can't do this. This is illegal. As a company, we've been really consistent the last 7 years. We don't write laws. We don't even have opinions on laws. It's not our job as a private entity. I think we've taken a wrong turn as a business society and saying what's good and bad and jumping from the thing to the next thing and just focusing on what our job to be done is for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, it is illegal to have an abortion in some states. And if law enforcement via city council is being tasked to enforce that, which for the record, I've yet to meet a single police chief that's been tasked to actually enforce abortion laws, they could use Flock to do that. Now, I have personal beliefs, just like you do, I'm sure. And this is tough for me, right? I'm a father. I've got two little girls. I have a wife. I have a sister-in-law. My opinion just doesn't matter in this debate. And so in some states, would be illegal to use Flock to enforce an abortion law. And in some states, it is right within a law. But I do get back to this concept of what is societally being enforced. And in my dialogue, at least with every police chief that I met with, every city manager, city councilor, they're not going to enforce it. And the example I'd give you, which is probably not particularly sensitive, would be something like jaywalking. It's illegal to jaywalk in every city, but no one enforces it. It's just not societally. We chose as a group, we're not going to waste law enforcement time on this type of a case. And in my experience so far, at least, that's what's happening with abortion laws.
And if you live in a place where that's important to you, go to the city council.
Vote. And vote, right? Like, this all gets back to these laws didn't just show up. These laws were decided on by people who were democratically elected to write them. And that's what I try to get back to all the time, which is, if you don't like the laws in a city, in a county or a state, change who's getting elected. Most people I meet, not everyone, most people I meet agree that a crime-free world would be a better world. So we agree on that. And if we agree on that, I think it's a really healthy debate for then, okay, well, how do we achieve that goal?
Tell me about that one message that you got from a victim that you'll never forget. The moment, yeah. What it was. Is there one that stands out and rises above them all?
If I had to pinpoint one, there was a case nearby Atlanta where there was a young mom pushing her son in a stroller. Now, this is a predominantly Hispanic community. It's a community that is targeted because there is a belief that if you commit a crime against these people, they will not call 911. So we talk a lot about the negatives that you described of our immigration. Let's talk about a society. Let's talk about a community that is being targeted because of the same problem, but Flock's helping them. This woman is walking her child. A car drives up. It's a red Acura. Jump out, snatch the child, and drive off. Random acts of violence like this happen rarely, but they do happen. Within a few hours, using Flock, this police department was able to track down the individual going onto the highway, getting off the highway, going into a nearby town. Even before an Amber Alert is released, they actually make a decision not to release the Amber Alert because they are so confident they not only know who the individual is, but where he is. They engage with Georgia State Patrol and Georgia Bureau of Investigation. They make a safe apprehension of the individual and return the child back to his mother. I met with her about a year ago. This is 4 years after the abduction occurred. She still cries when she sees me. I still cry when I see her, because that could have been my son, could have been your kids. And in this case, to quote the chief, this was going to be definitively a cold case without Flock. This was a true random act of violence. And I've heard of that, and I'm like, I can tell you about a similar case in Ohio that happened. I can tell you about a similar case in Virginia that happened. I can tell you about a similar case in California that happened. I'm going to list of cases where it's not that random.
Yeah.
When you multiply it by 300 or 400 million people. And so I guess for me, like, she's a great advocate of the technology, of more importantly, the police department, because I didn't do anything hard. I wrote some code, built some cameras. It was the police department that did all the hard work. It was this Georgia State Patrol. And so I guess, to answer your question, like, yes, I can cut a long list of individuals that I consider good friends now.
Oh, that's wild. And they just text you, email you.
Yeah. I get a lot of emails.
I never think about license plate reader cameras. I've never thought about them ever, except, you know, maybe if I'm going down a toll road or almost run a red light or something. But now that I've been working on this story, I've started to see them. When you drive around, are you like, oh, there's our camera. Oh, there's our camera.
It's my kid's favorite game to play in the car.
What do you want to say to the critics, the folks that are kind of hammering on these things every day, that this isn't safety, it's surveillance. And they're playing on those fears on that side of this discussion. What do you want to say to them?
Yeah. Propose a better solution. If we all agree that the world would be better if it's safer, give me better ideas then. I'm one guy. We're 1,500 people. We're coming up with the best ideas we can. Let's build the future together. Like, I don't have all the answers. I think I get frustrated or disappointed when people take the easy path of just criticizing and not proposing better solutions. It's very easy to be a critic. It's much harder to be a writer, to be a creator. And I'm sure you deal with this in your life. It's easier to edit someone's story. It's a lot harder to build the story. And I think we need to really promote people that are building, not just criticizing.
Why can't we get people to stop littering? Why, when and how can we use these cameras to get people to stop littering, Garrett?
So today we only work on crimes related against peoples. But what I would tell you is, as the company's had more success, our mandate and focus has expanded with us. And we do believe we'll make a bigger impact than just crime on cities. I hadn't put littering on my list. I'm going to put it on my list now.
Yes, please.
But I think of things about roads that don't have potholes, reducing traffic. Like, I want every city in America to be a better place to live. And littering is officially on my list now.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Great questions.
Just to make sure everybody knows, we do have the other side. We are hearing from a lot of other people, ACLU, Professor Elizabeth Joe, one of the world's leading experts on privacy, policing, and technology. What are your questions? And Scott, what are your final thoughts? Like, was that an interesting interview to you?
Yeah, I think just from a consumer perspective, it's not something that you get to see behind the curtain a lot. I think, you know, when you hear police are looking up information, my biggest question marks are, what's that information look like? How do they get it? How do they obtain it? So I thought Garrett did a good job at explaining how they prevent their technology from getting into like the wrong hands or the wrong detective. But my biggest question is the deregulation of so much happening in our country. Flock can try to do as much as they can. They can try to put as much parameters up, but will that stop state, local, federal agencies and the government from abusing the power that we see so often?
It's such incredible technology in the right hands. In the wrong hands, it scares the absolute out of me. And I feel like that is the case with so much new technology, especially with AI coming out today. So my final thought, well, hang on, folks. We're in for a wild ride. As this solves incredibly horrific crimes, let's just be sure we're paying attention and asking the right questions and keeping companies, not just Flock Safety, but companies like Flock Safety accountable. There's too many technology companies that have zero accountability. I'm looking at you, Coinbase. So let's keep the questions coming, keep the conversation going, and come right back here to Techishly Gen, because you know what? We are not another boring tech podcast. What'd you think about today's episode of Techishly Gen? Be sure to let me know, follow our newsletter, reach out on the socials. Can't wait to see you right back here on the next installment of Techishly Gen.